Good afternoon. Thank you. All right, so we're going to talk about Windows Server 2012. Now, maybe some of you have gone to some 2012 sessions earlier today. If you have, we'll cover a smidgen of some of those things. But, I mean, what I wanted to focus on was giving you sort of a breadth overview of some of the just cool features that are in 2012. I mean, there's over 300 brand new features. There's over 3,500 features, capabilities, and it just, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, we're never going to touch everything in a 60, 75-minute session. So what I want to do is sort of focus on what I think are the top 10 features across some of our core capabilities, and then get into some really great demos showing some of those, showing some ways that we focus on a few things to really give you a taste of some of the sessions that you can go to. I mean, we have over 80 sessions on Windows Server 2012 here at TechEd EMEA, TechEd Europe, that you can actually go to and see these things for yourself in a lot more depth than I'll talk about. I'm going to talk about it at a fairly high level and give you that whole view. A couple of things I do want to point out. We have this book, Windows Server 2012, Introducing Windows Server 2012. So this is available for free. We have lots and lots and lots of them. So if you go down to the Channel 9 area, down in the TLC, you'll see the MS Press area. Pick one of these up for yourself. We'll definitely go into some of the areas that we talk about today. It's a really good introduction book. And then in our TLC area, hopefully tomorrow, if we can find some boxes, we have our new Hyper-V posters. We've never had the posters in Europe before. I know many of you have probably downloaded them from the web and looked at the PDF. These posters sort of focus on all the core features of Hyper-V. They're a really good visual representation of Hyper-V, and for a geek like me, they look really good on my wall. So let's go through a few things. Now, you've heard this again. I mean, if you were in the keynote this morning, I hope you enjoyed our keynote demos this morning. We hit 1 million IOPS, which we were really, really happy to do for a single virtual machine, and a bunch of other things as well. So, you know, we showed just some really nice, quick glimpses of what Windows Server 2012 could do. And really, it's all around why Windows Server 2012. And yeah, you can look at the whole thing. Oh, it's the comprehensive cloud platform, and it saves time and money and supports the modern work style. We all know that. I mean, these are the core tenets that we use to develop these products. But I like to look at what does that mean inside. What does a comprehensive cloud platform mean for me? You know, I've got a data center. Yes, the cloud is something that I need to look at and will help me, you know, in the future. But the cloud to me is not a switch. It's not on or off. To me, the cloud's a journey, right? And a comprehensive cloud platform, or something that we call going beyond virtualization, is the step, the idea of taking what are the core tenets of what a private cloud can provide, or what a public cloud can provide, that automation. The system at 2 a.m. when something goes wrong can actually do things itself without getting you out of bed. Or the system that's automatically answering to what our businesses need. If applications need more support, they need more memory, need more space, they need more scale, the system automatically responds to that. Because myself as an IT professional, I've built up all this underscore fabric, this plumbing, this management fabric to automatically associate with that. And that's what Windows Server 2012 provides. It provides this core solid architecture, this core solid plumbing, both for our data centers and supporting what we need to do today in our data centers, upgrading our 2003 servers, upgrading our 2008 servers, upgrading and migrating off other OSs, and also leading us into the private cloud of providing those core concepts of the private cloud. And we really looked at how we could, again, enhance the way that we focus on economies, making management easier, multi-server management, automation, scripting. You're going to hear this time and time and time again. PowerShell is the key to what Windows Server 2012 is. And when they talk about 2,400 commandlets of PowerShell, they're just the ones that we've counted so far. I mean, every day teams make new PowerShell commands. It's their mandate. If they make a GUI, if they make a feature, if they make a function, there has to be a PowerShell command or commandlet associated with that. So by the time we RTM, that 2400 number is going to be nowhere near our final one. But again, we understand that not everybody is going to learn 2400 PowerShell commandlets. So we've made it a lot easier for people to really get into PowerShell, use PowerShell, understand PowerShell, and make this a lot more automated. We really wanted to focus a lot on this idea of multi-server management. And you're going to see lots of demonstrations of that through the week, and I'll go through some as well. And the last one is supporting the modern work style. This one to me is a really, really interesting one. Now, I'm not going to go too much into it because the VDI guys and the remote access guys will have a lot of focus on that this week. But this whole concept, as Brad was talking this morning, is the bring your own device. You know, more than ever before, as IT administrators, as cloud enablers, or whatever you want to call the people who look after our infrastructure, they're under all this pressure to have to support multiple devices, and devices that may not have the same sort of security that I want. I want to ensure that you have the longest password I can possibly give you. And then complex, I want to make sure that my IP and my servers are safe from the general users, right? Now, if you've got a phone with a four-digit code on it, and I can guarantee that four-digit code is probably 1122, that's not really safe. You know, I don't want, you know, my CIO's data out there on one of these devices. So the modern work style is all about how do we ensure security of IP and the right access to the right data at the right time, but how do we ensure that we give you the richness of experience? I can lock you down as much as you want, but then your experience is going to suck. You know, it's not going to be good. But I want to ensure that whether you're using a tablet, a slate, an iPad, an Android phone, a Windows phone, a Surface, whatever you're using, I want to ensure that experience is exactly the same. And the modern work style is all focused on that. And one of the big keys in the modern work style is VDI and our server app V. And we've made this so much easier. If you've ever played with VDI before, you know that the manual is so thick you could beat a whale to death with it. Now, it's about 6 clicks to get VDI up and running. You can deploy desktops in seconds now, where before it used to take you a lot of time. So VDI becomes so easy to deploy, and the cost of economies comes so much down, it's just one of those things that becomes a lot more easier. So if you look at Windows Server capabilities, I like to look at it in two different ways. The scenario capabilities, which are focused around infrastructure, what are the core platform that we have? Support for applications, mainly around IIS and web application, but this is then going to get into hybrid applications. How do we connect my system to the cloud? Private cloud, public cloud, hosted cloud, doesn't matter what it is. How do I make that seamless connection? And then client, what we've just been talking about. And then I look at core technical capabilities, which we're going to go through today. So let's actually jump into some of these and have a look. Our first one is virtualization or server virtualization. So, server virtualization is all around Hyper-V. And the way I look at it is, what we've done in 2012 is we've taken Hyper-V from this hyper-server hypervisor that we built in 2008 in R2, and we've just amped it up and put it on steroids. We've done some amazing things with it. And I really want to just highlight some of the core technologies that we've focused on this. One of them is Hyper-V network virtualization. Now, if you went to the foundational session, Jeffrey Snow's foundational session, you saw me demonstrate a very small part of this. And what Hyper-V network virtualization is the ability to virtualize the network layer. So Hyper-V, as we know it in 2008 R2, virtualizes the server layer, GPU, CPU, memory. Looks and feels like a physical computer to the applications that you build on top of it. Hyper-V network virtualization virtualizes the network layer. So effectively, my NICs, my virtual network, my switches, look and feel to the systems like physical devices. However, they're virtual devices. And every time I go into a virtual world, I have a huge amount of flexibility. I can mold and change this as I want. And the great thing about Hyper-V network virtualization, it gives me the ability to create single address spaces. So where before, if I had two subnets, two physical subnets, maybe they were split across two geographic environments, two buildings, two organizations. I would have to use something like VLANs or something similar to do that. Hyper-V network virtualization, you can just basically lay on top of that. The idea here is these machines, these VMs that are sitting within that virtual network have the same IP address range, no matter what subnet they're on underneath. Each VM is given two IP addresses. One, which is its virtual IP address, which it uses to communicate with every other VM or every other server within that virtual range, within that network. And then underneath, a provider address, a hidden address, address only known to the server, only known to the system. This is its physical address. The great thing about this is that physical address can change, the virtual address doesn't. If it's 192.168.1.1 here, sitting in Amsterdam, and I move that over to Seattle, and I move it across a bunch of, you know, subnets, it's still 192.168.1.1. It gives me the ability to bring my own IP address no matter where I am. The power of this is, what happens if I want to go to the cloud? I want to extend my system to a hosted provider. All right, before, I've got a 192 address range. My hosted provider says, now you have a 2.1.0 address range. Now I have to go and change a bunch of stuff. Now, I just migrate my VM over there, and I keep that same IP address. So it's a very, very powerful technology. Associated with that also provides inbuilt multi-tenant security and isolation, so I can run my divisions or my departments in a very secured environment on shared infrastructure, and they'll never be able to talk. It's great for hosters as well, because then I can scale up and do great multi-tenant isolation associated with that. Our next thing I think from a great feature point of view is shared nothing live migration. Now, live migration in general has just, we've really hit it out of the park with Windows Server 2012. You know, we supported live migration before in a clustered environment, and now we support live migration outside of a clustered environment with a number of different techniques. And I'll demonstrate some of these. But I think one of the cool ones is shared nothing live migration. The idea here is I have a server here with block storage or direct attached storage or whatever, and I have a server here, exactly the same, connected to nothing but an Ethernet cable. And I can migrate a running virtual machine from server A to server B across that Ethernet while the machine is running, while people are accessing it, with zero downtime. So I'm not reliant on shared storage, I'm not reliant on clustering. Basically, I just have two separate systems. Great thing about this is now we're looking at hosted providers getting involved in this as well. So that means I can live migrate my running virtual machine from my local system to the cloud while that's running with zero downtime. If I've got two clusters, if I had to migrate a virtual machine from one cluster to a complete separate cluster, it was downtime for me. Take the virtual machine down, export it out, copy it across, import it back in. Now, just move it. Takes me seconds if I've got the right amount of bandwidth. Now, massive scale. We've done a huge amount of stuff with massive scale. I'm going to leave that for a second and show you a slide on some of the new scale enhancements that we've got, which I think are quite amazing. Around cluster enhancements, I think we've got a bunch of new enhanced features for Hyper-V and cluster enhancements. I think the biggest one now is the ability to do simultaneous live migration. So before, our live migrations were all serial. So if you wanted to live migrate 20 virtual machines from one node to another, grab it, live migrate. Grab it, live migrate. Now, select them all, live migrate, and we'll queue them up. Now, our only limiting factor in live migrating a virtual machine runtime from one node to another is bandwidth. If you've got a big enough pipe, if you've got a great big pipe, if you're utilizing load balancing and multipath I.O., you can shove as many VMs as you possibly can down there. So we're not limited to 2 or 6 or 10. You can effectively, again, saturate that link and migrate a bunch of them. And you've got complete control of this. Out of the box, I think the limit is we set the limit to 2. But you can just go in and up it, up and up it, and you know, we show demonstrations of migrating 20, 25 at a time. Anything that falls outside of that, we'll just queue up. I can show you a really good example of this. Some other great clustering enhancements we have also is we have the idea of affinity and anti-affinity. I've got virtual machine 1 and 2 on this node. It's a SharePoint VM and it's a SQL database. And you know what? I really like them being close together. So in a failover, either planned or unplanned, I want to ensure that these virtual machines always remain on the same node, so I can actually set that affinity up. However, I've got server 3 over here, and these servers don't like each other. I don't want them on the same node for a bunch of different reasons. So I can ensure through anti-affinity rules they'll never end up on the same node together. We have a lot more prioritization of VMs. If I migrate, if I do planned or unplanned VM migration, it will prioritize the way it brings those VMs out on board on those machines. So I can say these virtual machines need to be up and running before these ones. So then I can use things like dynamic smart paging to ensure that I get all my machines up and running, but I can get these ones up and running in memory incredibly fast, and then use something like smart paging to bring the other X amount of ones up as I start, maybe I'm trying to migrate all these ones down to a single node. If I start getting short on memory, I can then start focusing on smart paging. We also support things like encryption now in clustered files. So the great thing here, this is great for hosters, I can ensure that my virtual machines or my VHD environment is completely encrypted on their environment as well. So there's some really great enhancements, and that's just scratching the surface of some of the ones that we now support within our cluster enhancements. And I'll talk a little bit about this more as we move on through. Hyper-V Replica is a brand new technology we've introduced in Windows Server 2012 that provides a synchronous replication or offline replication of a running virtual machine. So the idea here is I've got Site 1 and Site 2. And Site 2 could be anywhere. It could be in the same rack, the same building, could be across the country, could be in a service provider. It doesn't really matter, as long as I can get to it. And I can take a copy of this running virtual machine and have an offline copy of this, and it's kept completely in sync. We sync it every 5 minutes. We have a bunch of new great technologies around that. So if this site goes down for any reason, I can quickly and easily bring that virtual machine or that site up. In the keynote, you saw an example of that this morning when we used a runbook to do that from a failover perspective. So our runbook actually utilized the failover and started the Hyper-V replicas up. And I'll show you a really good example of this as we walk through as well. We now support a bunch of new hardware offloading. So we support ODX, which is our offloaded data transfer. Great thing about that is now I can rely on the SAN infrastructure to do these high-speed copies for me, and I don't have to eat that processor power. But we don't stop there. We actually support things like virtual HBAs now. So if you've got a SAN with HBAs, you can actually publish those HBAs into my virtual environment. Why is that good? Well, then my virtual machines have direct connection to the HBAs. They no longer rely on my host. They don't have to go through that host. If I don't have to go through the host, then my virtual machine access to that HBA or to that SAN is a lot faster. We also support IP offloading as well. So again, we have direct connection from the virtual machine to the physical network infrastructure, to the physical NICs. Again, if I don't have to go through the host, things are a lot faster for me. So the IP offloading really provides a huge amount more performance in the way that we're supporting our environment. Some other things as well. I talked about virtual fiber channel. We now support guest NUMA support. So this is the way that we enhance or the way we can extend up to 64 virtual processors in Windows Server 2012 virtual machines and ensure that virtual machines can actually now start sharing that memory architecture and that processor architecture for speed. We also now support runtime memory configuration with the new dynamic memory. So we can actually up the memory in runtime. You can't down it, but you can up it. So the concept here is if I've got a virtual machine and I've allocated 2 gig to that virtual machine and it now needs more, I don't have to bring that virtual machine down. I can just go in and up that virtual machine up to 1 terabyte of memory, and then we'll have access through that dynamic memory to the new memory allocation that I give it. And the last one is the Hyper-V switch. Now that we've had the Hyper-V network switch in our current versions, I mean, it's the way that the virtual machines connect to the physical architecture. But the new Hyper-V switch is something special because not only it provides that basic service, but it's fully extensible and it can be extended both by us, and we provide a lot of new technologies for it, and also by third parties. So in the keynote this morning, you saw Cisco being able to provide with the Nexus integration. We have a bunch of other ones as well that are providing extensions to the Hyper-V network switch, such as Five Nines and Juniper and a bunch of other guys as well that are really providing a lot of extensions to that switch environment, both for security, for management, and for performance. So we have this fully extensible and open platform that even you can actually write extensions to your switch. So if you want to ensure that you're looking at, you know, spoofing traffic, router guarding, all this type of stuff, you can actually write these extensions to those switch. And especially if you're a partner, then you can actually on-sell them to customers or repeat them at a customer's environment. There's also a bunch of new other things the Hyper-V switch does, which I'll show you some examples of. So let's flip over to my demo machine, which has gone to sleep. Okay. Let me just log into it. So I'm going to show you some basic around the new things around Hyper-V and some of the things that we didn't talk about, which I think are quite good. And the first thing I want to do is just create a virtual machine and just walk through some bits and pieces of that. So I'm going to go and create a new virtual machine. So it's very similar to what you've done before and, you know, in your environment. So I'm just going to I'll keep it as a new virtual machine. You know, I'm only going to allocate 8 meg to this because we'll never start it. And we won't connect it. But, so here is usually where you put your connection into your direct attack storage, your block storage. Now, in the past, you might have used LUNS or iSCSI. However, you still needed to map it to a drive. Virtual machines needed to have a drive. Now, in the new versions of Windows Server 2012, you can now utilize SMB storage. So effectively, your VHD files can live in SMB file shares. We've done a lot of extensions into SMB 3.0 to really help with that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to point this out to an SMB file share. SMBSO. Let's go and browse that. So I've just got a virtual disk folder. I select that folder. Now you can see that I'm pointing my location into an SMB file share. Now it's not a normal SMB file share, that one that you would stick PowerPoint in or Word in. It's a very specialized SMB share that we'll walk through a little bit later on. So we're just going to go and create that and hit the finish button. And we had a little bit of an error there. That's quite cute. Anyway, so once we... Thank you very much. So once we've had a few little networking issues, once we have an SMB file share up and running, and I can show you one up and running. I've always, you know, as a good, as you always do in a good cooking show, I've created one earlier. So you can see here that I have, it's a little bit gray, but you can see here that this is pointing out to a file share on SR04. So this is actually, its VHD file is living on that SMB file share. Now let's walk through a couple of other things in here. Well, one, we can now support up to a terabyte of memory. So you can see here from a maximum memory point of view, this is about a terabyte of memory. So from a dynamic memory range, I can go down to 512, maximum I can go up to a terabyte. So having a terabyte of memory, you know, is a huge increase over what we had before. When we look at some of the processor component, we support the compatibility access, the ability to, you know, live migrate from an AMD infrastructure to an Intel infrastructure and back and forth, so you don't run into those compatibility errors. And our numerous architecture and technology as well. So the concept here is that you can actually go in and configure, if you're a NUMA freak, you can go in and configure exactly the NUMA architecture. Or my favorite button here is use hardware topology. I'll go in and play with these, and then I'll just hit use hardware topology. And it's going to go and talk to the NUMA, the enhanced NUMA infrastructure that these boxes provide. Some other things as well that I think are really nice is the ability, is the new virtual hard drive aspect. So let me go and do this again. Let's point at a different, because I really wanted to show you this. Da-da-da. Let's point it out to this server now. I'm sure there's a share on this server. Here we go. Aha, look at that. Okay. Let's go and look at it now. So this gives, now one of the things that we've done in, one of the things that we have done in Windows Server 2012 is we've got this whole concept of a new VHD file, which is VHDX. And the big thing about a VHDX file, which is new over our current runs, is that we now support up to 64 terabytes and a bunch of other things as well. We support 4K drive spaces. We support RFS, a little bit more resilient. They can handle a little bit more damage and pain than the original ones can. So you've still got the ability to have VHD files, which support up to the 2 terabyte limits, and you can migrate all your VHD files from VHD to VHDX. So we have that capability in build as well. You can't go back the other way, though. You can't go from VHDX back to VHD, so it's definitely only a one-way transfer. But it's quite an easy thing to do in that aspect as well. From network perspective, as I talked about before, we've got the also ability to do a bunch of new IP offloading on this on the network cards. So from a hardware acceleration point of view, I can do hardware offloading, and I can also enable SROV. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about what SROV is from a virtual network point of view in our networking aspect as well. You can also see that we introduced a virtual machine queuing as part of our IP network infrastructure as well, which is going to help with a lot of when you do high-density virtual machines in the way that you queue the requests on those network. From an advanced feature, inbuilt into the virtual network, inbuilt into virtual NIC, we now support MAC address spoofing. And also a new DHCP guard as well, straight out of the box. So you've got some inbuilt security as part of the NIC aspects, as part of the new virtual switch aspect in our new virtual machines. Some other things that are really nice as well that I talked about before is the new virtual SAN manager. So if you've got a SAN infrastructure and unallocated LUNs, they'll get published and made available straight to the virtual machine, and I can connect my virtual machine. Straight to this environment. And then the virtual switch as well. As I talked about the virtual switch, we've got the ability to have inbuilt extensions of those virtual switch. One of the inbuilt extensions that we provide as part of Virtual Machine Manager and Network Virtualization, we actually have a DHCP extension where the virtual switch will give your virtual network, virtual machines in the virtual network, IP addresses without having a DHCP server. So that way it can actually control the way the IPs are allocated in that virtual network infrastructure, and Virtual Machine Manager can track that for you. So there's some really great new flexibility in the way that we're doing Virtual Switch Manager. So this is really good. So you've got all that cool things. What things can you do with the new virtual infrastructure? So the first thing I want to go away. Okay, the first thing I want to look at this. All right, so we've got 1 hour and 18 minutes to go before my machine's going to restart. Good old Microsoft. Here we go. So the first things I wanted to show you, is from a clustering perspective, you can see here that I have my clustering server, and I have a bunch of virtual machines. And, you know, this view would be very familiar to you if you've used clustering before. The good thing here, as I said before, I've got now the ability to just grab all these virtual machines, grab them, hit move, hit live migrate, let's move mode the best possible node, and you'll see here that these guys will queue up and they'll live migrate through those. So it gives me that ability to do quick, fast live migrations through that as well. Hyper-V replica can also be enabled in a clustered environment as well, so I can have a replica environment for my cluster environment associated with that. And then we talked about all those other new great new features that clustering's involved. So this is good. That's a new enhancement of live migration in a clustering world. If we go back to my little server here, which is this guy here. Okay. So the big thing here is that we've now got a number of new different live migration techniques. So if you have an SMB shared environment, which is what we showed you before, so effectively you have a share with your VHD sitting on that share, it gives me the ability to do a lot of great things around live migration. So for example, I can move this virtual machine across my organization. So you can see I get two choices. I can move the virtual machine, or I can actually move the storage as well. So we support live storage migration. So you can leave the runtime on one server and migrate its VHD files, no matter where you want in your organization, as long as it can access them, usually on an SMB share. So I'm just going to use the virtual machine, and I'm going to show you some of the choices we get. So we're just going to put this out onto a server in my organization. And you can see it's going to offer me a number of different choices. I can move the virtual machine's data to a single location, and it will prompt me for that location on the destination server. I can move the virtual machine's data by selecting where I want to move the items. And the great thing about if I use this one, I can actually move the virtual machine items to completely different locations. So you can see here, my virtual machine is effectively made up of five things. The runtime, which is what's in memory, the VHD file, my snapshots, my smart paging, and my configuration files. And the great thing about that is you can actually move all those to different servers if you want. So if you're doing some planned downtime, I can say, you know, I want my VHD files on this really fast storage I have over here. My configuration files and all that can sit on this really other commodity storage that I have over here while I do this planned downtime. So it gives me the ability to really be flexible in the way that I deploy all aspects of my virtual machine around my organization. So I'm just going to go back here. I'm going to move only the virtual machine. So I only want to move the runtime and then leave its storage in place. So I click the Finish button here, and what you'll find is the first thing I do is get an error. I go, well, what's that error? Well, it's saying that the machine I'm trying to migrate it to doesn't have the same virtual switch topology that I currently have. So it's preempting me and saying, all right, here are the switches available on that server. Where do you want to join this? Now, if it had the same switch topology, it would just automatically migrate. So I'm just going to choose this, click Next. Click Finish, and we should be able to migrate across. Now, because it's SMB Live migration, and it's only migrating the runtime, this should be fairly quick. It's a very small virtual hard drive. So, you know, if you had a 512, 1 terabyte, or, you know, 1 gig, couple of gig file, it should migrate quite fast across that. And you can see from if I go to SRIV, you can see that that file has now been up and running for 15 seconds, or that virtual machine's been running for 15 seconds on that. Now, if I go and look at this one here, and I look at the settings of this guy, you'll see that he's actually running on direct attached storage or block storage. So he's running on a local C drive. So there's no shared storage. There's no nothing. And this is the great. This is that new shared nothing live migration. So again, let's quickly just go through this. Hit the move button. I'm going to move the virtual machine. I'm going to choose to move it over to SRV01. I'm going to determine where I want to migrate it to, but I'm going to let the virtual machine destination server decide where they put those files. So I'm going to say the destination server is saying, oh, it's probably got the configuration files in one directory and the VHD direct in another or something like that, but I'm going to rely on that destination server. Hit the next button, I get a nice summary, and hit the finish button. Again, I need to just choose my NIC, hit finish, and now that virtual machine is live migrating. Now, this is going to be longer. I mean, this is a large file. This is 8 or 10 gig, so it's actually quite a large file. But I can actually access that while it's up and running. So you can see that this is up and running. It's quite happy, and I can access this, use this, has zero downtime while it's doing that. So effectively, what happens... when I do this, so I put the destination server in a mirror I/O mode. So any of the I/O that's happening at this stage is being written both to the primary server and the destination server as I'm migrating the core VHD over. And as I get to that final pieces, those migration blocks get smaller and smaller and smaller until I do the final migration. And there's a tiny brownout time where I basically rewrite the Mac components to those. But that's within the TCP/IP limits, so your applications and your users will never know it. So there's some really great new things around the live migration aspects of that as well. So the last thing I want to show you is, so you can see we're up to, 6%. The last thing I want to show you is that Hyper-V replica. Now, Hyper-V replica is super simple to set up. So basically, all you need to do is click on Enable Replication on one of your virtual machines. You choose a replica server. In this case, you know, let's go put it out to server 6. It'll ask me, what authentication do I want? Do I want to use Kerberos, or do I actually want to use certificate-based authentication? So this would be really good if I'm doing my replication to a service provider or a hosting partner, where I'm actually going to use certificate-based authentication to that. Because I'm internally, I'm just going to use Kerberos over HTTP. What VHDX file, so what's the VHD files that you want to actually replicate? If there's more than one, it will show those, of course. How many recovery points do you want to go back? A recovery point is about an hour. So how many hours do you want to go back? We support up to 15. We also support integrated VSS copy as well. So the good thing about this is before we do that snapshot, before we do the replication, we can go into our VSS aware applications and tell them that we're doing that. SQL, Exchange, a bunch of others, and they'll clean up their dirty bits and all that type of stuff. So I'm going to choose only the latest recovery point. Now the big thing here is, how do you want to replicate this? Because these files can be big. I mean, we can support up to 64 terabytes now. So say if I have a 5 terabyte virtual machine, that's a lot of data to move over the network. How do you want to first do it? Now if it's internal, I can say, you know, go for it now. Go. Or I can say, you know, do it at 3 a.m. when no one's online. But what happens if I'm doing it to a service provider or doing it to a geographical location? Well, I can actually copy this out to a Blu-ray or to a external drive, mail it to them, they can load that onto their site, bring it up, and then I can join the replication and just merge the changes since I made that last replica. So it gives me a lot of control in the way that I do things. And effectively, gives me a summary, and then my replication's up and running. To show you some replication, if we go and click on this guy here, you can see he's been replicating. I can view the replication health. And you can see that I've replicated a bunch of times, 255 times at 100%, which is always really good. And my average size is about 639 kilobytes. So this virtual machine doesn't really do a lot. It just sort of sits there for my demos, right? But the great thing here is you can see from a time perspective, we migrated less than 5 minutes ago. So our next migration should be really quite soon. Good thing about this, again, you're going to replicate, you're going to be synchronized every 5 minutes. So let me show you an example of what happens when HVR goes wrong. So here we go, or if something goes wrong where I'm going to use HVR. So I'm going to turn this off. So basically I'm going to force a disaster. So my server's off. I'm down at this stage. All I need to do is go to that replica site. You can see that replica server's sitting there. I'm just going to hit replication, hit failover, choose what recovery point I want to go back to in case I'm just going to use the latest one, hit the failover button, and I'm basically back up and running. So I've only been down for, 30 seconds, a minute? Now, in an organization, if you're doing this one by one, you're going to be a little longer. You saw this morning how we could orchestrate it with Runbook. You can run, you know, do a proper Runbook and run this through a service manager. But effectively, the idea here is that you can bring these things up really quickly. Now, if you're using network virtualization, it's great. You'll utilize the same IP address. If you're not using network virtualization, you can actually, if you go look at the settings of this guy, when you enable replica on my network adapter, you can see that I get a new thing called failover TCP/IP. So I can force an IP address into the failover. So I can say, you know, it's got a 192 IP address over here, but if I fail over, I'm going to force an IP address into that, and then maybe I'll go back and rewrite a DNS entry so they know where that VM is. So I've got a lot of control in the way I do things in that environment. Alrighty. So I did mention that I wanted to talk a little bit about scale enhancements. So here's the current scale enhancements we've had with Hyper-V and where we are against R2. So our big ones, we now support up to 320 logical processors on the host server. Windows Server 2012 all up supports 640 logical processors. And that's what we can count at the moment. We're continually testing how many logical processors we can support on our environment. From a physical memory point of view, Windows Server 2012 will now support up to 4 terabytes of physical memory on the host server, and 4 terabytes on a non-host server as well. We support up to 1,000 virtual machines on a host, so huge VM density. From a clustering perspective, we support up to 64 nodes in a cluster and up to 4,000 virtual machines also in that cluster. You don't need 64 nodes to support 4,000 virtual machines. You could probably get away with 4 or 5 nodes. They'd be pretty busy nodes, but you could get away with it. From the guest itself, the biggest enhancements, we now support up to 64 virtual processors within that guest. Huge amount be able to support that ability. In fact, we worked out with a SQL team, With the ability to support 64 virtual processors and a terabyte of memory, we can support about 99% of the SQL workloads out there that have been currently running. So again, there's no workload that can't be virtualized on a hypervisor platform. So some really great enhancements around this environment. So let's have a look at the next one, management and automation. So we've done some really nice things around management and automation. It's all around multi-server management. The idea now is your server manager tool that you've known in our previous versions becomes a lot more multi-server management. The ability that you're going to run this on a client. And why are you going to run this on a client? Because we want you to deploy Windows Server 2012 as server core. Now, in the past, you've had two choices when you deploy your servers, especially 2008, 2002. You can deploy it a full version or a server core version. Now, I'm probably like you. I look at it and I go, I want the full version. I don't want the server core because it says full, so it means it's got more features, right? Well, it was never the case. The only difference really between server core and full was the GUI. And if you had server core and then you needed a GUI, you're pretty much stuck, right? You're going to have to rebuild that server core environment. So what we tried to do is to say, all right, if you've installed Windows Server 8 or the 2012 RC, you'll notice that the default choice is Server Core, and we've renamed it to make it easier. Server Core or Server with a GUI. Basically the same thing, Server Core or Server with a GUI. Now the good thing about that is that we're saying, you know, there's no reason you shouldn't deploy Server Core. And then we've built some really great remote server administration tools for you to run on your clients to access that multi-server management. So server manager becomes a core multi-server manager. Now, I'll go back to server core when I do the demonstration. I'll talk a little bit more about server core and full GUI and things we've done to make that a lot easier. But with this server manager, we've done a bunch of new things. So role and feature deployment. Why have I always wanted a GUI? Why have I always had to RDP into a server? Well, mostly it's to do role or feature deployment. Because if I want to deploy a new role, I have to be on that server to do it. If I can't sort of go into server A and then, you know, deploy a role on server B. With the new 2012, my server manager tool is a centralized part that I can deploy server roles and features to any server in my organization as part of that 2012 infrastructure. And I can either do that through the server manager tool or I can do it through PowerShell. We also have a nice integrated console, and I'll show you some demonstrations of this, to make it a lot easier to do basic Windows Server management, services, events, best practices, things like that. We support over 2,400 commandlets in PowerShell. And again, we're making it a lot more easier for you to use PowerShell. And as part of our PowerShell engine, we've got a bunch of new things. We now support disconnected sessions. So if something happens while a PowerShell script is running, it will pause, it will wait until the problem is solved, and then it will continue to run. So the concept here is I can run those things stateless. So things don't crash if things go down. Basically, it will work out where it is, it will work out how to recover, and then it will continue to go. We also provide a new Windows PowerShell workflow engine as well. So Windows PowerShell has got a new built-in workflow to understand how and why which systems that they need to access and be able to define a workflow on how to do that. We've got a new tool called Windows PowerShell Web Access. So you can run PowerShell no matter where you are in the world through a secured certificate website. I'll show you an example of this. So basically the idea here is if you need to run a PowerShell script, you need to work out where you are from a PowerShell point of view, you want to do some administration, you can use the RSAT tool, or you can sit on a beach in Hawaii and you could open up your PowerShell web access and actually run PowerShell commands on any server in your organization. We've made it a lot more easier to use Windows PowerShell in an integrated scripting environment. We've extended the functionality of the integrated scripting environment. I'll show you some examples of that. And we've done a bunch of new things around script sharing, the ability to share scripts across multiple servers and even take that script across multiple organizations, whether you're a partner or whether you're a hoster. And we've done a lot of great new things to ensure that we can help you define exactly what new PowerShell commands and what, you know, made it a lot more easier for you to understand the PowerShell syntax. Let me show you an example of this. Okay. So I'm just going to open up the server manager here. And for those of you who have seen the server manager before, you can see it's actually a metro-style app. So it's got the idea of a metro-style app is the way that it basically is written and looks and feels. So the concept here is that its dashboard is quick glance. So we know green is good and we know red is bad. So we can build this infrastructure into that to do really quick views of the dashboard components. So you can see here that I can look down here. I can say from a role and role and services, these are all the roles that I have currently installed in the servers that I'm managing. I know I have one Active Directory server, and I have 10 servers that are running file and storage services. I've got 9 Hyper-V servers and a couple of IIS servers. And I know a couple of these are feeling a little bit ill because I've got some red here. The great thing here is I don't have to go to those servers. I don't have to know which servers they are. I can effectively fix that from this multi-server management role as well. But this is the basic view out of the box. So you can see here, I'm sorry I'm scrolling here, it didn't seem to have gone full screen, but you can see here on the left-hand side, I've got access to all these services, all these features associated with that. I think one good thing that I can do is I can actually create my own customized server group. So I can call this mine. This is my server group. And basically I can add some servers in here. So I can, let's go just choose these couple. I'm going to add them in and click OK. Now what you'll see here is I've actually, on this side, I get an entry both on my left-hand column, but I also get an entry down here. So if I look down here, you can see that here's my tile in the dashboard. So I can click on that, and I can view the servers associated with that. So here are all the servers that you saw before. And you'll see as I click through these servers, the events will actually change. So it's amalgamating, aggregating all these events. If I choose all these servers, it will show me all the events associated with these servers. I can filter on that. So you can see here, I can go through this, and let's just choose. I'm getting a lot of... So I can filter on those, so this is a DNS entry, and then I can basically save this as well, and I can say, all right, I want to save this as a DNS error, and then I can use that query across my organization. So if I just wanted to query on that, I can easily do that with this tool as well. I look at all the services associated with all these servers. We have inbuilt best practice analysis, so before this was something you had to add on, so we actually have BPA inbuilt into the tool. So my servers will actually go in and actually determine, you know, from the baseline of best practice analysis, what you should do. And so it's saying here, you know, I should be avoid storing smart page files on a system disk. So I can actually go in and say, all right, well, I'm using smart paging on a system disk. It's saying that I shouldn't because that's going to affect my performance. We also have integrated performance as well. So you can see from a performance counterpoint of view, this is my integrated CPU and memory usage. And I can click on each of these servers and it will show me a view of those. I can also define performance alerts. So I can say I want to be alerted in the dashboard when I hit certain thresholds. Again, basic administration out of the box. Now I can do some other really good things here as well. So for example, if we go back to the dashboard, you can see here I have a service down. I can just click on that. I have a service, the firewall service is down on server 6. How do I start that? Well, in the past, I have to bring up computer manager. I'd have to hope my RPC is working, and I'd have to hope the firewall rules are working, or I'd probably RDP into that server. Now all I have to do is right-click and hit start service, and it will start that service up for me, no matter where that is in my organization. And you can see that should be up and running. Click OK. Now mine is all green. If I look at my manageability, I can click on that. And you can see that I've got some manageability issues as well. So I can go and manage this. I can clear events. I can do all that. It gives me that ultimate in server management. So some really, really nice things here. Some other things I think are really nice here is when we talk about multi-server management, I think one of the biggest things that it can do is the idea of context management. Let me show you that. So if I click on my all servers here, here are all the servers in my organization that I've added here. And if I right-click each of these, certain things are going to come up. So this is a cluster node. I can tell this because it's got the word cluster in it. But if I click on this, that's a cluster node too. If I click on that, wow, look at that. That's all the Active Directory commands. That's an Active Directory server. So I don't have, again, all I'm doing is looking at these servers, right-clicking on them, and they're basically looking at what services are installed on those and saying, here are the administration tools associated with that. And if you click on one of these administration tools, it will take you straight to that server. So, for example, let's look at Server 02. If I click on Windows PowerShell, it will actually take me to running PowerShell on Server 02. So, again, I don't have to go in, write the computer name in. I can launch that administration tool directly for that server. So it gives me the ability for that context menuing. Some other really great things it does as well is I can just add and remove a feature. So if I wanted to add a new role and feature, I can click on which one I want to, which server I want to add that role to, and I can just run through that quick wizard. So here I'm installing a server. You can see if that's not the right server, I can choose any server associated with this. I can also deploy a role or a feature to a virtual hard drive and then attach that virtual hard drive to a server to install it. So it gives me a lot of good flexibility in the way that I'm deploying new roles and features in my organization. All my tools are still completely available, so I wanted to manually click on a tool. They're all there, so I can actually choose that information. But I think one of the biggest visual aspects when we talk about multi-server management is if we go look at file and storage services, one of the hardest things is creating shares or formatting a disk, adding a new disk. I have to physically be on that server. I have to RDP or I have to do something. It's always been hard with tools before. But if I go and click on the volumes button here, what it's going to do is it's going to go out and show me all the volumes across all my file servers. So here are all the volumes across every single file server in my organization. And it will actually show me by different colors where they are. So green's good, lots of space. Yellow, running out of space. Red, you're really out of space. So you can see here, I can easily look at all the volumes associated with those. If I click on one of those, if there's any shares associated with those shares will pop up. So you can see there's a share associated with that cluster storage node. If I wanted to create a new volume, I could do that from here. If I wanted to create a new share, I can actually do that from here as well. So we have a share here. I can right-click on here, click New Share, and go and create a new share on that volume. So again, it gives me the ability to do this from a multi-server management point of view. So let me show you some other cool things we've done as well. So we've really tried to enhance some of the new PowerShell capability that we've done. And from a PowerShell perspective, we've got a new command called Show Command. And this is going to become your best friend if you're not using the ISC. And the show command basically pulls out all the commandlets that we have here in PowerShell. So if I wanted to do, say a Windows feature. Let's pick on that one. Seems to be the favorite one of the day. If I can type. You can see here, I can actually look at all the Windows features. I can look at details. I can look at all the parameters associated with that. So I'm in PowerShell here. I'm not in any tool. I'm just in pure PowerShell, and I can view all the information about that. Now, the good thing about that is I can also, you know, here's my Get Windows feature. Let's just type it here. Oh, can't type today. And it'll show me all the Windows features. There you go. There's all the Windows features. But you know what? That's so many. Like, I just want to know the Windows features that are installed. So we've tried to make it a lot more easier and the context a lot more easier. So I can say Get Windows feature, and I'm going to give it a parameter. I'm going to say where installed equals true. Trying to make the syntax a lot easier. So we've lost the ideas of dollars, and we've lost the ideas of parentheses and all that type of stuff. We're trying to make it a lot more easier. So again, here are all the Windows Server features where installed equals true. So that's great from that aspect. Let me show you another tool. Let me show you the ISC. Now, the Windows PowerShell ISC takes this to another level for us. And the ISC is effectively our integrated scripting environment. So again, that from that show command that we saw before, that's completely available here. And you can, you know, do that same thing. You can look at the Windows feature. And the good thing here is I can show the details, and then I can actually put things into it as well. So I can say RD13 SRV07. I can look at different credentials. I can then hit the run button and it will automatically input that into my ISE tool and all things like that. So you can actually go and pre-configure a lot of these. I can copy them, I can insert them, I can do lots of other things as well. But it not only does that, it does a bunch of other stuff as well. So if I type in get, first thing you're going to know, I have IntelliSense built into this as well. So I can start guessing about what I want to do. And then you can say, all right, well, there's my get Windows feature. Oh. So that's really good. It also has, not just for the commandlets, but it has, you know, a bunch of these for all the parameters as well. So where equals true. So it's exactly the one that we did before. So again, the ISE gives me a lot more capability in understanding the PowerShell components. Now I'm not going to go too much into PowerShell because we have like 10 sessions on core deep PowerShell in your environment. But there's one thing I do want to show you, and I wanted to show you this. So if we go and open up Internet Explorer, I'm just going to open up the PowerShell Web Access. Now, it's giving me I'm using a temporary certificate. So this is why you're just going to see that red line. So this is completely the ability to access PowerShell external to your organization. Just going to log on here. And I'm actually going to point this to a server in my organization called SRV07. So even though I'm logging on SRV04, I'm actually pointing to 07. There's PowerShell, web access. So what I can do, in this case, I'm just going to look at, say, you know what? Run this for me. Now, this is a really interesting command because what this is showing you is that my GUI now is a role. It's a feature. It's not part of the core OS. It's a feature that I can turn on and off, and it's showing two aspects of this. It's showing this one called Graphical Management Tools and Infrastructure, and it's showing the Server Graphical Shell. Now, the Server Graphical Shell is the GUI as you know it today. And then you've got this new one, which we call the Graphical Management Tool and Infrastructure, or what we lovingly know as what we call the Minimum Installation Shell. Or we'll just call it Min Shell for short. The big thing here is these are roles, and as roles, I can turn them on and off at will. So here's that concept about Server Core. There's no reason you can't and shouldn't install Server Core. You install it. If you need the GUI for something, say you've got a third-party application that needs the GUI to install, you know what? I've got a PowerShell command. You turn it on, costs you a reboot, but you can turn the GUI on. GUI's on, you install your application, run a PowerShell command, back to Server Core. So you can actually do this in your environment. Why do I want to remove the GUI? Less footprint, couple of less updates. You don't need that little bit of performance overhead. Server Core is quite sweet to look at. So it's actually quite a great ability to actually use PowerShell to add and remove the GUI. But you know what? That's a big change to go from this GUI to the Server Core. It's a really big change. And, you know, so we thought, what could we do to help? What's in the middle? So you're seeing here, we have this different one here, this installed, this is called this Graphical Management Tools and Infrastructure. So let me show you that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to load up Hyper-V here. And I'm just going to jump onto this server here. Hello. Here we go. I'm going to log into it. And the first thing you're going to see once I log into it is that it will look and feel like Server Core. It's hot in this room, isn't it? Here we go. Let's do this one instead. Sorry, wrong server. Okay. Caught myself up in the last one. All right, look and feel like Server Core. But immediately, what did you see in the background? So this is server core, as you know it, but this is what's called the min shell. And the min shell will load up server manager. So this server is halfway between server core and the full GUI. So I've got command line, PowerShell, server manager, and also the ability to run MMC. So this is your halfway point. If you can't get, if you can't let go of the GUI, and in the server core you go, oh, this is really big. Min shell is definitely the halfway point that allows you to do it. But again, you can go from server core to min shell to full GUI, back to server core, back to min shell. It's a PowerShell command, just cost you a reboot. Really, really simple infrastructure to be able to support that. So let's go. Here we go. Next thing I want to talk about, I want to talk a little bit about storage. We've done a bunch of new things in storage to really help things. One of the new great things is storage spaces, virtualizing the storage environment. The idea of taking commodity hardware, just a bunch of disks. I've got a disk array. It doesn't have to be rated. It's just a bunch of disks. And I can take them, I can join them together as one virtual disk. And then I can carve them up into different volumes. I can carve them up into different environments. The great thing is they're fully flexible because they're virtual. And then associated with that, I can do a bunch of new things. I've got new file system improvements, new NTFS. You don't have to take volumes offline to do check disks now. I can do all this check disk stuff online. We have a new file system called REFS, Resilient File System, which is a lot more resilient to file errors and disk corruptions utilizing in most systems. We now support thin provisioning, really great way to bet on the future of storage. Hey, my application needs a terabyte of storage. Well, not today, but maybe in 6 months' time. But I can give you a terabyte of storage today, right? It looks and feels to that application, to those users, as a terabyte of storage. And then as they start nearing that, nearing the end of my volume, I can then just expand that system for them. New cluster shared volume. We mentioned before, a cluster shared volume used to only support Hyper-V. Now cluster shared volume supports everything. So your file shares, SMB shares, applications can all sit within the cluster shared volume environment. SMB 3.0 for workloads. We showed you examples of how VHDs can now be supported into SMB 3 or file shares. Also for SQL databases as well. In fact, we've done so much work with SMB that in most cases we beat block storage and direct attached storage. So we're faster than actually accessing the local disk of most of these systems based on multipathing and the SMB Direct and RDMA and all these great new technologies, these offloaded technologies, because we wanted to make SMB as resilient and as fast as possible. Great thing here is you can then build up these storage banks of commodity storage, the storage banks of ODX-enabled SAN environments, really start tiering your storage, in, you know, a premium storage, secondary storage, all those things. We now support offloaded data transfers we talked a couple of times about. New technology called transparent failover. If you're going to support SMB storage in a really big way, we want to ensure that that's up and running. And transparent failover allows you to have active clustering for your file shares. And each of those nodes will actually do load balancing across those file shares as well. So the great thing there is you can have these SMB file shares within clusters and do that active component. We now support NFS. We've supported NFS before. We now really enhance our NFS support and NFS speed, both through our with our SMB shares as well. Inbuilt iSCSI targeting to the system is really quite nice. And you saw some of the new storage management aspects when I looked at the management component. So let me show you an example of storage. We'll be way done by then. Let's hope. All right. So the first thing I want to show you around storage is this technology we call storage spaces. So I'm just going to point out to our server here. And the idea here is on this server is you want to create a storage pool. And a storage pool is an amalgamation of all these disks, these just a bunch of disks. So in this case, you can see I've got four unallocated disks on this server. And I can create a new storage space out of that. So I'm going to create a storage pool. And I'm going to call it my pool. And then I'm going to choose which disks I want. In this case, I'm going to choose two of them. And I can determine how I want to add them. I can allocate them manually. Say, you know what, I'm going to reserve it for the storage pool so it's not used by anything else, but I don't want to allocate it yet. Or I can allocate it as a hot spare. So look, this is very familiar if you're thinking about a physical disk environment. In this case, I'm just going to add them all together. Why not? Let's add a third one as well. And you can see that as I added these 137 gigabyte drives together, that I've got a total capacity of 410. So it's just basically pulled them all together. I'm going to hit the Create button. It should only take a couple of seconds to create. Okay, now we're done. The next thing I want to do is create a virtual disk. Once I've got a storage pool, that's my virtualization layer of my storage. Now I want to create these disks or these virtual disks on top of it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my pool and go in my disk. And then I got the ability to determine what resiliency I want. Do I want simple? Do I want mirroring? Or do I want parity? If I want to like do striping across my disk, like similar to what we've done with the RAID systems, in this case, I just want to use mirroring. It's going to ask me what type of provisioning I want in that mirrored environment, whether I want thin or fixed. In this case, I'm going to use thin. And then what size do I want? Well, you know what? My virtual hard drive guys are telling me they want as much storage as they possibly can get. So I'm going to give these guys 2 terabytes of storage. Now, we only know we only got 410 gigabytes, but they don't know that. Click on the next button, hit create. Again, because this is all virtual, it's all flexible, this will take just seconds to create, and now I actually have a 2 terabyte disk to be able to create volumes on and make them available to my end users. It will look and feel like 2 terabytes. Let me go and quickly create another volume to show you something. So I'm just going to create a new virtual disk. In this case, I'm just going to create a simple one. So I know resiliency. I'm going to create it fixed. And we're just going to give it, say, 350 gigabytes. Okay, so you can see, basically, because I've created that fixed structure, it's saying that I'm starting to run out of space. Now, the great thing here is because it's virtual, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do any reconfiguration if I'm running out of space. All I need to do is extend it. So I'm running out of space. I add a new physical disk to the system. I right-click, add physical disk, choose that one, click OK. And that storage pool will automatically expand. So now that storage pool is expanded. I can go down to my virtual disk. What I'm going to do, I'm going to extend that one, and we'll say give him now 450 gigabytes. Click OK, and now he's got 450 gigabytes. That's because I'm mirroring. Let's go 400 gigabytes. That should be good. There you go. So now he's got 400 gigabytes. So you can see that, and then I can also extend volumes as well. So the next thing is creating a volume. So, you know, I don't need to show you creating a volume. But if I have a C drive that's got 350 gigabytes, I can now extend that whole C drive to 400 gigabytes. So it gives you the ability to be very flexible in the way you're creating that virtual environment. So very, very cool. Storage spaces is very, very cool in that environment. The last thing I wanted to show you was when we talked about share infrastructure, we can create new shares. And you saw that you might have seen this pop up before. I can now get the ability to create multiple different shares. And the big thing here is I can create my normal share that you've known from an SMB environment. I can create an advanced version of that if I want to do data management and quotering and you know, things like that. But now I've got the ability to do an SMB application share. So an SMB application share is a highly available share that provides me things like continuous availability. I also have the ability to do the NFS shares that we talked about before. Now, if I do an NFS application share, the first thing you're going to see is that, since I'm not creating on the cluster, you're not going to see that. Let me do that. It's going to just create a new file share for this guy. So basically what I'm doing is creating a new file share on my scale-out cluster. We talked a little bit about the active-active clustering that we saw before. So I'm going to create an application file share on my cluster. And you'll see here that I now have that continuous availability association with those. So it automatically preempts and configures certain components within that environment. So it makes it a lot easier to ensure that I'm using the right file share for the right application, and all the configuration is done, the continuous availability, the enumeration, the ACLing, all that type of stuff as well. So with that, I want to go through one more slide, and I want to talk a little bit about networking and some of the new enhancements we have with networking. So I think out of the box, we've got some new brilliant things with Windows Server 2012 around networking. NIC teaming, out of the box, supporting up to 32 NICs within a team, and you can load balance across them. Network virtualization we talked about before. DHCP failover. So this is non-clustered. This is just DHCP scope failover in your environment for DHCP resiliency. SRIOV, the single root IO virtualization. So the concept here is that your NIC cards create little virtual switches themselves, which your virtual machines connect to. So again, I don't have to rely on the host and the virtual switch of the host. I can actually run straight to a virtual switch that's being hosted on the network card itself. Why do I want to do that? Well, I get massive amounts of performance doing that. There are some drawbacks. I don't get the extension aspect that I want. You know, if I'm using virtual network switch extensions, I don't have access to those. But if you just want pure performance, pure access, the ability to access the NIC directly from the virtual machine, it's a great thing just to turn on. We now have inbuilt resource metering for our virtual machines out of the box. You can actually build chargeback and lookback systems. Dynamic virtual machine queuing I talked about before. A new tool called IP address management, which allows you to do your full view of IP addresses across your entire organization and manage both their IP subnetting, IP allocations, IP management, and also the DNS infrastructure that goes along with it as well. So it gives you that single view of an IPAM system. We have quality of service out of the box, and I'll show you a demonstration of this in just a moment. New enhancements in branch cache, especially branch cache over WAN, to make it easier to access the branch cache services. And we've talked a lot about SMB. You know, and now we support SMB Direct and SMB Multi-Channel, the idea of multipathing our SMB solutions to make things a lot faster. And if you go down to the TLC, you can see some great examples where we're pushing a million and a half IOPS out through these SMB connections. So I quickly want to show you the last set of demos around networking to really bring some of this home. So if we go and pick on one of these servers again, so what I'm going to do here is I want to show you two demonstrations really quick. The first one I want to show is quality of service. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up that ISC that we saw before, and I'm going to open up a script, a PowerShell script. And this is a really simple PowerShell script which allows a quality of service to a virtual machine. So effectively, I'm going to set some bandwidth throttling through PowerShell. Now, you can do this through the GUI in Hyper-V. You can go into Hyper-V, go and select all this stuff through the settings in Hyper-V, but you can see I can do it through one line with my virtual machine infrastructure, or my PowerShell infrastructure. So I'm just going to copy this into a share. You can see it's up and copying now. And then what we're going to do is we're just going to click on this little guy, and we're just going to run this part of the script. And we should, after it runs, start seeing that go plummeting down. It's starting to plummet down now. You can see now it's coming down, and that will come down to about 5 megaseconds. So just simply with this PowerShell script, the good thing about here is I can actually automate this. If you hit X amount of this, if you hit this, I can automate that. Turning it off, I just basically clear the maximum bandwidth button. If I hit that, go back that, you should actually start seeing this respond and start going back up. So inbuilt quality of service for virtual machines. It's not just that. We can actually support three types of different quality of service. You can support this maximum. You can support minimum. You can support percentages. You can support multiple ways to ensure that certain virtual machines have guaranteed services and then do the share across the rest. Okay. Let's cut the rest about that one. The other thing is our VM metering. So I'm just going to open up another script here, and you can see here that VM metering is all inbuilt into our PowerShell environment. So to turn it on, all I basically do is turn on my get VM metering. So that's a command which enables VM metering into my Hyper-V host environment. And then basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to measure the RDSRV07, and it will bring back certain information. So here's the average RAM, the max RAM, the min RAM, total disk, network inbound, outbound. So this is information that's just pulled out of PowerShell. So you can pull this out of PowerShell, put it automatically in an Excel script, all this type of stuff. But what I've done is I've actually run a cost a script here. So here's a function script that I've created where I put sort of cost per memory, all this type of stuff in here. So this is a really quick script where if I go run a calculate costs, and I go run this, let me go run the function, shall we? Oh, my little mouse is running out of power. So let's just run the function, and then I'm going to run the calculate VM costs. You see that it's going to pop out this VM's cost $90 since its last reset. And the good thing here is, again, we've got the ability to reset the VM metering. So you could actually build this up in an automated script that every 24 hours, it pops out all the data, the cost, does a reset, and then does a calculate. So again, straight out of the box, you can see, and there'd be a slight change between these two. It wouldn't be very much. Oh, sorry, you can't see that. I can see it on my screen, but you can't see it too well, can you? There you go. It's so easy to pull that information out and utilize that. But out of the box, you can pull this information out utilizing PowerShell, utilizing all your VMs. So it's resource gathering, resource metering for you to then build those systems, either those chargeback systems or lookback systems. And we expect a bunch of partners also to be able to take this information and extend that. So with that, you know, I think I've really just sort of touched the surface of what Windows Server 2012 has done. I mean, we didn't talk much about the Active Directory enhancements, such as now you can do AD cloning. So you don't have, before you couldn't sysprep your AD environment, your AD servers. Now you can basically grab your Active Directory machines and run a special cloning thing on it, which is basically an XML file. And then you can actually take those images of your Active Directory VMs and clone them. And, you know, so you don't have to install an Active Directory server again. You're just basically cloning them. Active Directory is completely supported in virtual machine environments now. Before, you couldn't snapshots. It was live migrate because of the timestamps. Now they're completely supported. And you can deploy Active Directory through PowerShell scripts now as well. So we have a great new aspect around the Active Directory scripting. We've done some really great things around DNSSEC and really, really supporting the new DNSSEC standards as part of the Active Directory solutions. And there's some great new technologies around claims-based authorization. If Ben works in finance, he has access to this. So I don't have to worry about ACLing folders, ACLing this, ACLing that. You can do the what if. What if Ben works for finance, he gets access to this. What if Ashley works for marketing, she gets access to this. So you can actually start thinking about the claims-based authentication instead of the ACLing that you basically do. We've got inbuilt classification out of the box. The idea that if somebody puts personal information, social security numbers, national card numbers, putting in Visa card, Amex card numbers in a document, the system will automatically classify that within 10 or 15 seconds and encrypt that data automatically. And you can build your own views of that as well. So it gives you a lot more control over things like classification. And then I talked about before the ability to also, our modern work style, the ability to deploy VDI infrastructures in a matter of seconds, in about 6 or 8 clicks. And really extend your modern work style aspect as well. So as I said, I've just touched the surface of what 2012 can provide. There are lots of sessions focusing on all the individual components that I've talked about today. So hopefully you've seen enough to whet your appetite. We think it's the best release of Windows Server ever. I know we say that every release. However, we're calling this we used to call it the release of the decade. We're now calling this release of 20 years for Microsoft. So, we're thinking this even pips Windows 2000, which was a huge release for Microsoft. The first day I started Microsoft was the day we launched Windows 2000, so it's a very special release. But, you know, this is a game changer. This is going to change the way that we deploy support, our Windows Server infrastructure, both for data centers and for the cloud-optimized solutions and private cloud solutions moving forward. So get your hands on it. It's in an RC form now. Go to the sessions. Go to the TLC. We have lots of people here to talk to you about, and hopefully you'll fall in love with it as much as I have. But thank you very much.